Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right. GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. This is Andrew Horowitz. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We are here to make you some money. We're here to educate you. We're here to have some entertainment and to provide you some great insight, hopefully giving you the tools that you need in order to be much more successful in your investing endeavors. And wow, it has been a wild time of late, hasn't it? We're seeing some really cool things happening in the markets, and economically, we're seeing a whole bunch of hoo-ha lies and absolute distortions of truth. Questionably, some of the most remarkable times we've ever seen in our lives, and depending on how old you are, I can tell you in my lifetime, I have never seen a time when we have called no inflation when there is absolutely inflation all over the place. But nonetheless, it seems that we're being shielded like little children, like little babies, because it is too much for us to bear the absolute struggle that we are having right now. But nonetheless, it seems like the markets don't care and just keep on moving up. So great. One foot in, one foot out has been working nicely. And it seems that's probably going to be the case for some time longer, just to make sure that, you know, you have enough in there to make sure that you're making money when it moves up, but enough sense that if something breaks, some strange news out there, who knows what it's going to be, that you are able to pull the trigger very quickly and move out and into safer pastures, into safer areas, money markets, or some other type of short-term instruments, or even go short the market. That's what we teach here. That's what we talk about. That's the things we learn about, and I'm glad to have you here today. And boy, what a day. Just a quickie. I live in Florida, and it was gorgeous today. Played golf in the morning and spent some time with my family in the afternoon, got in the pool finally. Boy, it's been a while since I've been in the pool. And I was in the pool and had a good time with my kids there, and then had a great barbecue in the evening. And finishing up this wonderful friendship we have here on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, and really capping it off being with you. So I'm glad to be here. I'm hoping you feel the same. Thank you so much for subscribing. Boy, this thing has really rocketed. I don't know if you noticed it, but we're number one overall in investing, and number two in business, the top, I don't know, top 25 or 30 overall in iTunes. Thank you so much for being there. And obviously, we're doing something hopefully right that's giving you the education, the information, the insight to these markets, and hopefully making you a little bit richer. That's our goal right here. All right, so let me tell you what's going on and give you some updates. We have, number one, a great guest on today, Corey Rosenblum, who is the author, the primary writer for a great blog called Afraid to Trade. And I'm going to call him up, and we'll talk a little bit about what the heck he's afraid of. Let's find out exactly what it is he's afraid of. Let's find out his take on the markets. Let's find out, you know, what it is that he believes is going on right now. And I wanted to talk to you about a couple things before we get to that. And, of course, we're going to have the Zach Zone coming up with some great tips. Boy, Zach's been hot, hasn't he? He's a really smart guy, just a really good guy that really studies the market, a real student of not only the markets but some of the cutting-edge areas like IPOs. And he's going to come aboard and tell us what's going on in that area. But first, before we get to that, which we will in a moment, let me give you a few things that you need to know about. First of all, as you know, I've been doing some writing. I've been writing for MSN Money. If you get on over to the top stocks area of the MSN Money site, you'll find some things that I wrote about this week. Under Armour, I discussed. I also talked about GameStop, questioning whether or not GameStop has the fuel to kind of continue going in the in the light of what's happening with the gaming area, you look at THQI and Activision really falling short of sales, and you know we're having some struggle in that area. But also Under Armour, where you have a couple of things going on with Under Armour. Number one, sales starting to slow. You see also, you know, obviously in a recessionary environment, or at least in an economic slowdown, you're seeing a question about, you know, are we going to spend that kind of money on these type of apparel, and questioning whether they jumped the shark when it came to their, they just came out with a new pair or new style of apparel, shoes, moving away from the things they've done so well. So now they have to compete with the likes of Reebok and Nike, which I don't know if that's a good idea. But the other thing I want to mention is also on AOL, I write for them a weekly column called The Week in Preview. And on there, just to let you know, this is a great place for you to use as a reference. Because on The Week in Preview, what I do is give you the daily update of what really the highlights, what we're looking at here as a firm at Horowitz & Company, and really looking at exactly, you know, what's happening in the markets and what to expect. So next week, for example, we have a lot of the dry shippers coming out that have been just absolutely on fire. Just an amazing group. And, you know, talking about, do we believe that's really going to continue? As a matter of fact, I'm going to be doing some more work on that this week. Also, talk about the retailers. We have just an amazing amount of retailers coming out on Wednesday, Thursday, and a couple on Friday. But really, Wednesday and Thursday, this is just a logjam of retailers coming out with earnings. You need to know about this because a lot of people have been very negative on the retailers, and rightfully so. But the question is, what we have seen lately is when there is so much negativity on a particular sector, when the earnings come out and they seem to be not as bad as been, you know, really implanted in everybody's psyche, that it pops the stock pretty nicely. Now, I still think there's some trouble with the retailers. We've been generally away from the retailers for some time, a couple here and a couple there we've been into. But generally speaking, the retailers have a lot of problems. And if you know what's going on, the dollar situation, when it's moving up now, it's not going to help them too much. So I still have some skepticism there, but there's going to be pockets of the specialties, particularly the companies like BJ's Wholesale, which I mentioned in that article on AOL, that could do very well. You know, the alternatives to the regular shopping experience where you can get bulk food at a much cheaper price, and not only food, but other merchandise as well at a much cheaper price. And those models seem to be working. Check out those charts and talk about Campbell Soup. Talk about how their chart looks good, if you remember that phrase from way back. So those two things is really, I think, you know, two things that are really important to take a look at. But finally, I've been getting a lot of email, and I'll tell you, it's been something that I've been working on for a while, because probably for the last 6 months, I've been getting sporadic email, people asking me if, you know, our firm handles money, and, you know, we do this podcast, we have this book, The Disciplined Investor, plug, go pick up a copy if you want to know how to actually make some money in these markets, go to Amazon and pick up your copy of The Disciplined Investor. But you know, do we manage money for people? And you know, I've been reluctant to really talk about that because I'm trying to make this as educational as possible without any kind of you know, any kind of bias sounding discussion. But here's what we're going to do, I've been reluctant to talk about this, and this is what we're going to do. We are taking indications of interest. That's it. The simple indications of interest for a new fund that we're opening that's going to invest utilizing a very specialized technique of what's called it's kind of a hedge fund approach, but it's a short long fund where we can actively trade utilizing any technique that we want, from the quantitative to the fundamental, the quantafund, the techno that I always talk about, and anything in between, kind of the disciplined investor approach, but we're doing it in a much different way than we've done it before. For our private clients, we've done that in a way that's been, I guess, you know, in large sums, but this is going to be a much smaller account. It's going to be a much different process. It's going to be much more growth-oriented. And if anyone's interested, it's a $50,000 minimum investment, and we have the money in your account, et cetera. And again, I don't want to talk about this too much, but if you're interested in us managing money for you, here's what you do. Go to the website, The Disciplined Investor, on the bottom right. I kind of hid this, but on the bottom right, all the way at the bottom, it says indication of interest. And all we're doing is collecting to see what the interest is from all the emails that we've received. It seems like there's a lot. $50,000 the minimum. And that will, if it turns out to be something that we're going to do, and there's a lot of interest in this, again, it's just an indication of interest. It's not like, you know, an application or anything like that. If you're interested in doing that, if you're interested in us managing money for you on a growth-oriented basis, on a lot of the things that we've, you know, the style we talked about here, and you want to see how that works, and you can kind of watch us as we're managing your portfolio live for you at all times. There's some really great technology that goes along with this. Go over to disciplinedinvestor.com and check out the indication of interest. And there's like three or four different questions on there. And we'll get you out a package and provide you the details of what this is all going to, you know, be about. But I promised some people in an email that I would do that, and I'd announce it today on this podcast. So we'll end it there. And when we get back, we're going to talk with Corey Rosenbloom, who is very afraid to trade. Find out what he's all about. Find out what's going on with him. And stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. All right, it's time for Corey Rosenbloom, Afraid to Trade. And I want to know, Corey, how are you? But what are you so scared of? Why is your blog named Afraid to Trade? What is the whole blog all about? And what is it that you are really kind of really scared about?
Losing money. I think everybody's afraid of
it.
Yeah, most certainly. Risk in the market, large volatile down moves. When the market goes against your position, whether short or long, it's mostly that. Typically, the market will go up slightly, like it takes an escalator up and an elevator down. And so if you're on the wrong side of the elevator move, you know, that can create a lot of fear and anxiety. And that happened to me. I think a lot of people come into the marketplace as retail investors or traders, and they have such high hopes. They have high expectations, and they may make an initial amount of money quickly, especially in practice accounts and whatnot. When they go live, that's usually a different story. But I had initial success with the live accounts, and I had actually made about 20% in a couple of months, you know, just doing momentum stocks and quick, you know, news breaks and stocks under $10, and had a group of friends that was sort of helping me out. But, you know, all things come to an end, especially for new in the markets. And so I lost about 50% of the accounts over a weekend. So, sure. It was actually a stock. It was a PetMed Express or one of those. It was about 2003 or 4 there. And it was the number one small cap stock, and I think it was Forbes or Money Magazine, one of those magazines. You know how the headlines, and I didn't
mean like
the
headlines that say, like, you know, the top 20 stocks and the best 50 stocks for life and something like that?
That's what it was. It was the list of top 50. So, you know, I've been watching the stock for quite a while. It had gone from 20, I guess it was from 8 to about 12, and I jumped in with, usually I was trading 1,000 shares at that time. So I'd margined the account, 2,000 shares, and sure enough, on Friday, the stock went up initially, and I think the report came out on Tuesday or whatnot. Friday plunged in, and the thing had gone down $3, did not know what to do, held over the weekend, panicked, and by the Monday, closed it out. I think the stock had gone to 7 or something like that.
So then, like, as an amateur, right, you know, you were kind of, and that's what you said you were, an amateur. So, you know, you were kind of, like, hoping. You know, you're hoping and praying things got better. And then you held on over the weekend, and you really didn't know what to do. And really, what is, as an amateur and as even as a professional, you know, feeling really good about yourself and that you're really doing a great job?
I was arrogant.
Right. But what do you do about protecting the downside, and what do you do about protecting, you know, what you have and making sure that you don't get this, you know, really have the stock market take you down and have the stock really just run away from you and just, you know, sit there hoping that things are going to get better.
Yeah, and that was it. I was hoping over the weekend, you know, it'll turn up. It's the number one stock. There's no way it can go down. And I was actually planning to hold this thing for a while, and I was just doing scalp trades and day trades at that time. So I was going to bank my account on this one and hold it for a month or two and, you know, be a millionaire overnight or that kind of thing.
Not really.
So I actually had a plan. This is so embarrassing to admit. I had a plan that would take my account to $1 million in a year or some crazy scheme like that. And it was working initially for the first month, but yeah, one little hit.
So in the beginning, like, how do you learn? You go to the seminars, you read books, you do all these things. And actually, let me ask you this, because I think this is kind of important. I think I told you about a situation where last week I went and I listened to a seminar. I went to listen to a guy who has a pretty, you know, a pretty big name. And I listened to this group where you can start to make, you know, money on your stocks just by simply trading a half hour a day. And what you would do is you would, you know, utilize their software, and you would quit your job after this. They were pumping you up and they were getting you going, and they're really trying to, you know, show you how the man has been just doing you wrong all these years and figuring out how, you know, you could really make all this money by just simply for a half hour a day trading. I mean, you know, what's with these, and why do people do these things and really kind of hurt themselves in the process? And as a matter of fact, you and I talked about this a little bit last week, and I told you about this.
I remember, yes. I was impressed with the name too, by the way. I could not believe that, you know, that was happening with that individual.
Yeah, and in the room there was just average people. There were people that were just looking to get ahead. But again, this big rah-rah session that they were doing, where they were kind of saying, "Oh, you know, you've been working all these years for the guy, and they make money on you, your boss, and rah-rah, and you know, you pay taxes, and you shouldn't have to pay so many taxes, and you know, why are you just working for somebody else, and why are you doing this, and you could be doing it all yourself simply by trading stocks." and I just I don't know. I was kind of amazed. What is that whole thing about?
Money. They see money that way. It's just their easy riches for them. They sell the system and people buy it and they go home to the bank and they're holding the bags. Or we're holding the bag left over, the ones that we can jump into it.
So explain to me a little bit more about what happened with that trade, right? You got out of the trade and then what happened with that first?
What happened, a little bit backwards, after that, I didn't give up. I actually kind of gave up for a little bit. Oh, you know, this trading thing is way too hard. It's too risky and whatnot. And I'm a naturally conservative personality in terms of finances anyway. And so I took that opportunity. I'd been bitten by the market bug.
And we know that's
to kind of give up. But instead, I went to the educational portions. I said, I did a little initial success. I know others that have had success with this, not crazy riches. But over the time, they can build their accounts slowly and with conservative wealth building principles. And so I just went to the education side and went to different conferences. I read different books, and I actually did a lot of paper trading and some different system testing at that time. And so that initially, I guess the fear was so hard to overcome. But it really initially was overcome through practice, experience, education, solid foundation, different perspectives on the market, trading, fundamental statistical analysis, quantitative analysis, technical, which is my initial slant, is my preference. And it seems to be what makes sense to me. So I just added all those disciplines and just got networked here locally, networked with people throughout the country that I met at seminars and whatnot.
So what did you after that? Did you start the blog or did you, what did you do then?
I began full-time trading in 2006 at the end of that year. And it was very isolating, initially successful, but a lot of it was just being so lonely here in the home office and just sort of looking at stocks 8 hours a day and typically longer than that in the nighttime. So. And I had a private website for my friends and family that I kept in touch with throughout the educational process that I was building up the strategies and formalizing those things. So the blog was a natural progression to that, was a way to formalize the strategies, to be accountable to others, and to reach out to others that hopefully it had similar experiences that I had in terms of being, wide-eyed, bright, and excited, and then, losing more than I thought I could lose, and then coming back and not giving up. So the blog initially was for that reason, to reach out, connect, and to share my experiences initially.
So, it's interesting. You talk about emotions and afraid to trade and talking about emotions when it comes to investing. So I'd love to hear about
some of your
ideas on, what it's all about, the emotional part. Because I talk about it in my book. I talk about this whole idea that, when it comes to quantitative investing, when it comes to investing, emotions are okay in life. Emotions are necessary. But when it comes to investing, you got to check it at the door, And it's extremely important because I can tell you that when I can smell from a mile away when somebody's fearful on the other side of the trade, you could really, really take their lunch, if you will. It's kind of easy. It's shooting fish in a barrel because the fear, the fear really does a number on people and makes them do things that are really inappropriate. And, that kind of really is the whole idea of really how to... when you're day trading, at least to get some profits going.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of the marketplace is some of the strategies that I use now in intraday trading is just that it's fear based. When people see a stock goes too far to the upside or typically the upside, because most individual traders don't short. And so you see stocks go way up intraday, especially popular names, and they begin to fall. And that's a great short because people will just panic out. And you're right. I mean, eating their lunch is a good, it's kind of, horrible to say that, but markets and trading, it really becomes a zero-sum game. And having been there with a fear mentality, it's where you were, where your weaknesses were, and you begin to see what I would have done at that time. And when you can step out from above that and look down among what you used to do and what others probably are falling victim to, that's when you can make a lot of profits. It's a fade trading strategy or a go against the crowd, essentially, and that tends to be what works. As sad as that may be, that tends to be the way to profitability, at least intraday.
All right, so tell me some of the things that really helped you. I mean, what kind of things do you recommend that people do to start learning how to invest, or even, those that have some experience? What should they be doing to really understand more about the investing process and get their feet wet and really to expand their horizons? What did you do? What did you do to really, to really refine your technique and refine what you do?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things out there. Some of them are great. Some of them are not so much. I've been to a lot of seminars. And so I think what helped me was actually seeing the traders and actually talking with them, or at least hearing them person to person. A book is wonderful, and they can give you a lot of advice and not so much comfort, but education from that point of view that's broadened your perspective. But actually seeing someone that's been there, talking to them, hearing their voice, being right in front of you, that tended to help me a lot. And it gave perspective, because also being in those conferences, Traders Expo or whatnot, it was a room full of people that had similar situations to me. And I think what helped me the most in terms of overcoming the emotions and just being balanced was talking, was really seriously reaching out and making contacts and friendships with other traders that had been there. And a lot of it is it's a very steep learning curve in this business. And so having someone there to, maybe a mentor or whatnot, someone that's been there, knows the pitfalls, knows what to look for, because there's so many mistakes that we make. And there's a learning curve, and it's almost a progression of from wide-eyed beginner to deer in the headlights to, you know, cautious trader to experienced, et cetera. And then you become a trader, a master trader later on. To me, the best thing is just having someone to guide you through that and just broadening your perspective, broadening your awareness, and seeing as many different aspects as possible in the market, fundamentals, technicals, delving deeply into those, and just seeing what works for you and what does not. There are so many ways to make money in the market, but it really comes down to your personality, your risk tolerance, what you're willing to accept, your time frame, all those sort of things comes down to who you are in the markets. And it's your personality and individual psychology, individual preferences. So learn as much as possible, but all throughout that, be experiencing different techniques or tactics. So what helped me the most was just actually doing it, experiencing it. You can learn so much, and that was what got me into a lot of trouble, was that I'm naturally an academic and naturally like to study and learn and research, but that's great. And at the end of the day, that doesn't make you money. What makes you money is applying what you've learned and culling out what does not work. And there's no easy answer to that. It's just getting in there and getting your hands dirty and doing the work and paper trading and using the accounts that way.
So what about tools? What kind of tools do you use? What are you kind of like on a daily basis is your in your toolbox?
Sure. For my actual program and for my brokerage, I use TradeStation. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot of programming capabilities and indicators that I've downloaded or tweaked with myself. And I've learned to keep it simple throughout the process. And that's one thing that sort of most new traders think is that if I load my screen up, no matter what, or if I use so many tools, that I'll have success. But that's not always the case.
All right. The more crowded the screen is, the better success you'll have.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Right. And then actually, when I was, I guess, going back to the education question and what works and how to filter, that was a shocker to me. When I was at these conferences again and just interacting, I assumed that those traders were experts simply because they had an indicator that I didn't have, or knowledge I didn't have, or some sort of magic formula or whatnot. And it really wasn't until I had paid $1,000 or something to see a very prominent speaker. And the first thing that was said was, if there was a magic formula, if there was a magic indicator, I would not be in this Saturday class with you all. I would be in Bahamas or something, sipping a pina colada and having fun there. And just the point is, there's not. It's work. It's discipline. It's, day in, day out. And that's really how, success comes in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I want to ask you a question, and this is not pre-rehearsed. I want to ask you a serious question.
Sure.
Because I respect your opinion. You're younger than I am. I believe you're younger than I am. And I'm a professional in the business for 25 years. And about a year and a half ago, well, actually 5 years ago, I started writing this book. And a year and a half ago, I started working on this podcast. It became very popular, and thousands and thousands of people. Really, just a tremendous amount of people listen to this thing on a weekly basis. I get a ton of emails from people. And but yet still a lot of people are wondering, what is it that for those that maybe don't know and first tuning in and things like that, that what is it that really can be offered from something like the book? I mean, I sent you the book, right? About 2 weeks ago. And this is not rehearsed. So hopefully this is going to come out. You can be as brutal as you want right now, my friend. Okay. Tell me about what you thought. Tell me what you think it can be used for, who it's not for. Be brutally honest.
Sure. I think it was an extremely excellent book for newer investors, and I think that's one thing that was impressive to me was that it combined a lot of the introductory material into where to go. And you were mentioning earlier, where do you start? Honestly, without being rehearsed, your book is a good place to start. I mean, no joke. It talks about, it opens up with what's some basic terminology. Throughout the entire book, there are easy-to-read definitions, and the text is very easy to read and flows. What's important is that it talks about, as I mentioned, it's great to have a broader perspective on as many things as possible. Well, that's what your analysis does. It begins off with that, and then it goes into quantitative analysis, which is a huge subject of itself that I'm just starting to tap into. Then technicals, I think, is next,
right?
Which I'm huge into myself personally, but it's fundamentals as well, and it's putting it together and learning about those.
You know, the biggest thing is, I mean, obviously, you know, I had somebody recently write me that, oh, the book should have been longer, and I said, you know what? The truth of the matter is this, that, you know what? You need to get your feet wet somewhere. Yeah. Way too many people go into this, and I think, as we said before, they really don't want to spend the time learning. They don't want to spend the time getting involved in you know, the whole reading and seminars and learning and all that, but yet they just want to just throw their money into the markets, right? And hope for the best. And what I tried to do, I think, was the, and I think that you caught this, is that's really neat, is that I tried to make it short enough that it can keep your attention, long enough that I can give you all the components that you need to understand so you don't kill yourself, okay, when investing, and then give you a taste for each of the areas, because technical analysis, charting on its own, my friend Brian Shannon wrote a book. It could be 800, 1,000 pages, that whole, it could be volumes of stuff. Quantitative analysis, just tap on the head of Bar Rosenberg and start talking about quantitative analysis. And, you know, my 25 or 30 page on quantitative analysis is going to be like, you know, the Cat in the Hat. You know, so the fact of the matter is that I think that when you're right, you know, that you know, you need to find something that can give you at least that, and that was my intent, was to give you at least that backbone, at least the knowledge, and then you could jump off to something else. You
know, not just that, but that's your intro to it. Then I learned, honestly, as much as I've been in this business, I'm not that great at mutual funds, and I didn't know much about annuities,
right?
Guaranteed investment contracts. You have to draw a line somewhere, and you realize that's not for me, or that's for me later in life, or whatnot. But I honestly, and like I told you, that impressed me that I was able to, you know, gain from that. But the mutual fund chapter itself is wonderful. It talks about how to select, how to go about them, and I'm typically down on mutual funds because I'm you know, trade ETFs, and just for cost-based ratios or whatnot, I feel like they're better. I begin thinking I'm a trader, so I'm not as much as a long-term investor, but for individual clients, individual investors, that was wonderful information there.
Good.
And it really has a holistic approach, starting out with how to select and then how to really plan the rest of your investment career. Much more that I focus on short-term trading techniques.
Right.
So the book was beneficial to me,
right.
And as long as I've been doing this, that says a lot. That was impressive.
That makes me feel good. I appreciate that because I spent a lot of time with it, and you know, a lot of times, you know, people are listening like, oh, this guy's talking about his book again and all that. But I, you know what? Go look on Amazon. Check out. I don't know. We got 29-30 positive, and I didn't plant those there. You know, those are people just writing their own thing and all. And you got, you know, Corey, who's you know, a well-heeled fellow in investing and writes this great blog, The Afraid to Trade. So let's skip on over. I want to ask you another question. I want to get into this whole area of, you know, risk management is a big thing. And unfortunately, it could be a huge discussion. I mean, just tremendous discussion. It's misused. It's not used enough. But when it comes to risk management, now that you have that experience of that, we'll call it that, with no pun intended, that dog stock.
Yeah. Oh, that was funny. Pet Med Express or something like that.
So, you know, what is it that you, what do you do for risk management? How do you watch yourself?
I think risk management is extremely important. And coming from that perspective, that shaped my entire career and probably will for the next 25, 30 years. I'll always have that mentality, and I'll always have that conservative. And I mean, that was part of my personality. But, you know, they've been said, look down, or in an investment, look down before you look up. Look at the risk. How much can you lose?
Right.
You know, don't be concerned with how much you can make. And as more I've gotten into this, that's what professionals do. They assess their risk first. What is my stop loss parameter? What happens in the worst case scenario? Should I be buying protective puts, or is there some sort of option strategy or a hedging strategy or whatnot? Risk management is key to, I guess I'll kind of go longer term here, to investors, because throughout the lifetime, too, the market does have an upward drift to it, but there are some horrific downturns.
Like the Asian contagion crisis, right?
That was quick. It was over quickly. And then you had the 2001-2003 bear market, which included September 11th and the economic fallout from that. And the market at this point has recovered just barely above where it was at that time. So if you really,
the truth of the matter is the NASDAQ is still down about 50% from where it was at the high in 2000, and the S&P is right on the edge of where it was in Dow. But I'll tell you something, if I may interrupt just as a point of reference here, and ask you this.
Okay.
Do you believe that, because I have been on this bandwagon for a while, and you know, I always say I was on a bandwagon, I was shouting from the rafters for 2 years about real estate, okay? I was shouting for 6 months about Crocs. I did the same about a number of things, and I was wrong for a while. Well, you know, you don't have to necessarily be right immediately to be right, right? But this market stinks to high hell, in my opinion.
I'm with you.
And, you know, the problem is that, you know, it's almost like, or it is, truthfully, bad news is good news is good news, no news is good news, all news is good news, just give me something to bite into, you know?
Yeah.
And the prime example, I write an article for AOL each week. On Sundays, it comes out at noon over at AOL Finance. And I wrote a kind of a tongue-in-cheek discussion last week. By the time you hear this, it's going to be actually next week. So go back 1 week. And I said, you know what? What's going to happen? Check this out. I said, Freddie Mac's going to come out with earnings this week. And what's going to happen is they're going to come out with a huge loss. But you know what? They're going to come out with a statement saying, this is the last time it looks like everything is good. We're going to offer another $5 billion of notes. And investors are going to cheer. And they're going to say things are okay. And then all of a sudden, the day later, they're going to wake up from their concussions and take the stock down a couple of points. I said, wait a minute. Isn't that what Sissy Bear did the week before, right, with Fannie Mae? And, you know, lo and behold, not that I'm right. That's not what I'm saying to say this, but that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It's exactly what happened. People have their heads up their beep. You know what I'm saying? I mean, really, people have their heads up their asses right now. And the truth, I'll probably have to beep that out, but, you know, not explicit. But, I mean, when I say people, I don't mean, you know, anybody listening, of course, to this show, because we're all brilliant on this show. But,
yeah.
You know, it seems that investors have no care in the world for risk, because if you look at the general trend of things, and I can tell you some traders that I know that are saying, we don't care what the risk is right now. We're riding this, and we'll stop it out quickly on the back end if it starts to fall.
And that's a dangerous philosophy, especially with the intercorrelation of the hedge funds and whatnot. It just always seems like, even globally, if there's some sort of sell-off, all these computer programs will just fire at the same time. And we saw that in early January 22nd or so, where it just, you know, boom, the market collapsed. And it just exacerbated. All the sell orders triggered, and the computer algorithms just makes it worse. So I don't know how smart a strategy it is to keep wishing this market to go up and I'll take a small stop. You know, you may not be able to get that stop because it may happen overnight or some sort of horrible event like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and the truth of the matter, let's not even talk about weekend discussions like we've talked about a moment ago, but, you know, they've been right so far, and I just feel right now, exactly right now, I feel like two other recent times. I feel like we're in almost a replay of November when everybody got complacent again, thought that everything was fine, and then the markets just blew off, right? I feel like we're in somewhere in July, or I guess it would be August, when the things went down, people were worried about subprime and all that, and all of a sudden, things just got better overnight. And then all of a sudden, they just, you know, took down. I was talking with Aaron Task. At the time, he was with TheStreet.com. Now he's over at Yahoo Ticker. And we talked, and I said, Aaron, this is like the eye of the storm. You know, this is you know, kind of like there's more coming. And everybody has said the subprime mess isn't over. There's write-offs left and right. You know, my favorite stock to hate is Capital One. I reviewed that extensively last night. And I've been wrong, by the way, although halfway wrong. I was right on one side, and we made some money. I was wrong to hold the short a little bit too long, and they bid it up a bit, but it's back down to about 51 now. But the point is, if you look at their numbers, they're writing off anywhere from $400 to $500 million a month in bad debt.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
How long can a company – I don't care who you are – how long can a company do that, and why are investors not punishing this stock more?
It's a question that's beyond me. It really is. And I'm as bearish as about can get on this market. And, you know, it is in a technical downtrend, but that's almost why I tend to stay away from the news. And that it's almost whatever you see in the headlines is the opposite of what happens in the market. And that's not just in this environment. That tends to be pervasive. I've typically been bearish on the market since about 2006. So I was early too. I started taking some defensive measures then, but as the market kept going higher, and that was just based on sector rotation, interest rate models, and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
Before it got nasty. And so here we are now. You know, I don't know. What I try to do in my trading is just focus on the next high probability move and try to not so much weed out the news, because it's important to know the backdrop of the economic events that are taking place, but focus on the price, focus on what's happening there on the charts. And I don't know if it's almost ignore the news or whatnot, but it just seems to be more, at certain times, harmful to shorter-term traders, at least.
Yeah, but what they're doing is they're not ignoring the news. They're laughing at the news. They're scoffing at the news. You know, did you see the whole discussion about inflation last week, where we saw inflation numbers come out and they were benign?
Gosh, what was it? I think they
what is
excluded
that?
They
excluded
kind of a trick,
inflation.
Right? No, they excluded energy and excluded food.
No,
and
they excluded inflation.
They seasonally adjusted the energy prices. I think, what was there, a 5.6 or something percent increase in energy prices in April, and it wound up being a 0.2 decline or because of some governmental mathematics or whatnot.
I mean, it's just
and
unbelievable.
They cut out the food. I didn't understand that. That made
understand.
Me actually very angry. I didn't see that discussion on the site, but I was reading some different sources, and that really made me angry.
Yep.
Because inflation's here. I mean, it's rice has doubled in 2 years. Wheat, corn, gold. All those sorts of things are, and I follow commodities frequently, and that, you know, I don't know. I just don't know.
I don't know. And then you can look at some of the other things like dry shippers. You know, okay, I know they're going up, and I understand the reasoning, but you know how dry shippers run? You know, they run on fuel. Hello?
Right. Yeah,
I know. They have to have margin compression. That's the first one. And not only do they run on fuel, they run on a lot of fuel. Mm-hmm. You know, so you look at that. Then you look at some of the other areas that just rely on petroleum products, and you look at the fact that that overall the only thing that seems, I mean, I don't get on this rampage right now, but the only thing that seems to be holding things is up is the foreign investor. I don't understand. If we just had the most horrific, almost bankrupt on a Bear Stearns, I mean, we're talking about a major catastrophe here. What was that, a month and a half ago or something like that, right?
Not too long ago, right.
A month and a half ago, and the stock market, and you say, well, what the hell does the stock market have to do with it? Stock market's kind of a proxy for capitalism in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market is a proxy for the underlying economics in the United States, but maybe, it's not. Maybe it's really the underlying proxy for the United States in the context of a global economy. Now, that is interesting, right?
That is an interesting point. The stock market typically is an anticipatory vehicle that is supposed to anticipate conditions on the ground as the economics forecast. It typically leads the economy by about 3 to 6 months, but that's not really been the case over the last, I'm not sure how long, but yet it's been puzzling to me that that's not really happening.
Yeah,
as it used to be.
Yep.
It's beyond me. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, what is your? You've been a little bit bearish. What is your? You mentioned what you're looking for the next opportunity that, mathematically, and you think is going to be. What is your outlook moving forward? Aside from being bearish, but what would be something that you'd finally say, okay, I give in? You know, maybe not give in, but what would it have to take for you to you say, okay, that I like that position, I like that. Sector,
oh, yeah.
Like, you know, what, where are we going with that? You know, how are we getting you there?
Oh, sure. From a sector rotation standpoint, the energy prices being up is typically the last thing in economic expansion, and we've seen the consumer consumer staples throughout. From August to current have been outperformed, but now that's no longer the case. For me to throw the bullish towel in, bearish towel in, I would look for housing to bottom, financials to bottom, and begin to turn up. Consumer discretion actually somewhat doing that. Financials are still out, I guess, they're beneath the market now. At least year to date, they're down about, 8-9%.
The financials?
The financial sector is...
Oh, they got to be more than that. It's got to be more like 30%. Oh, no, because they put...
Oh,
you're talking about year to date.
Yeah.
Year to date.
Year to date.
I got you.
So looking at that, and healthcare has kind of been confusing too. From a sector rotation model, the model's not holding up the way I and our fund interprets it in terms of what should be expected from... the sector rotation at this point, and the economic readings from that it's puzzling to see technology doing so well, Google, Apple.
Well, that goes into my play. That, by the way, I will say, everything you said so far, I'm with you on. The technology issue, I think, has a real good reason. And I think it's because of the international component. I think it's because it's more of a, we're kind of like Borgs now. You know, you ever watch Star Trek?
Oh, yeah.
we're the Borg, right? You know, we're the Borg. We've assimilated, and we're part of. You know, technology is a part of us. You know, whether you wear it on your hip, you carry it around, you put it on your ear. I mean, you ever see those people with the Borg earpieces? You know, for the Bluetooth, right? So I think that's I think it's a huge part of what we do right now. And I think that when you think about technology, there is a real good reason why. Now, Google, by the way, I would have to say, God help me for saying this, but is probably not in that same discussion because Google really is an advertising company, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so that's a little bit
different. Advertising. They make their money through advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And most of their products are free. So, yeah, I would say that their money is most of their advertisements.
Right. And I would suggest to everyone out there, you haven't done it yet, go get a copy of Business Week. And you'll see what I'm talking about. On the front cover of Business Week this week, coming up next, actually, it's next week's Business Week. It hasn't been announced yet. But by the time you hear this, it will be announced. There's no secret. Steve Ballmer. And Steve Ballmer is talking about Steve Ballmer really going after Google now in the video and the advertising and the online ad space because they really need to kind of get to the next generation, whether or not they take on Yahoo or not, or take over Yahoo, or buy Yahoo, or mess up Yahoo, whatever they do.
Carl Icahn's trying to get his hand in the picture.
You know what? Why is it that every time something happens to the company, you either hear Carl Icahn's name or Warren Buffett's name?
I thought about that. Buffett caught the railroad trend before they happened. He was buying railroad stocks back in December or something like that.
Right. Now Icahn is buying this, and now this guy's buying the solar power of this. It's the same guys over and over. If everybody needs help, go to Buffett. If everybody wants to find something more aggressive, go to Icahn. And of course, you want to go to real estate, just go to Trump.
What is it, a big conspiracy about the big, funds drive the market or something? Yeah. The big people. So I don't know if that's the case. But
it's like the 12 tribes. We have the 12 kings of finance. You know,
that would be I like that. New thought I'm going to use.
Yeah. Anyway, so listen, we got to go. We got to wrap this up. So what's the best way you want anybody to check out your afraidtotrade.com? We'll put a link, of course, on the show notes. And how else should we get in touch with you?
It's just afraidtotrade.com. Mm-hmm. I typically just do the blog post there. I'll be expanding the website throughout this year. So look for newsletters, possibly. Look for more mentoring opportunities, which I do on a limited basis now. And you can check it back. I do about 2 or 3 posts a day on intraday trading, on sector rotation, and on the bigger picture and psychology and how to apply, overcome your fears through education.
Great. Hey, that's great. Everybody check it out. Afraid to Trade. Corey Rosenblum. He's a great guy. And thanks a lot, and thanks for the kind words on the book. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Andrew.
Well, stick around, Corey, because we can get right into a discussion with Zach Scheidt from the Zach Zone. The Zach Zone with Zachary Scheidt. Zach is a portfolio manager at Stearman Capital and blogs at ZachStocks.com.
Well, hey, Andrew. Hey, Corey.
Hey, Zach. How are you?
Hey, Zach. How are you? What's going on?
How are you guys?
I think we're pretty good. Things are all right. What's going on with you?
I've actually got a little bit of a cold here, so I'm going to have to apologize if my voice is scratchy, but there is nothing sick about this market, or at least not on the surface. It's trucking along fine, and we had another week of good gains. You remember last week I told you this week was going to stink as far as the deals that were on the calendar.
Right.
And the deals that we looked at last week really turned out to be pretty much what we expected. The VRS, which is the Verso Paper, it traded extremely poorly. They priced it at $12 a share, which was below the expected range. And sure enough, the next day it started trading at $10 a share. And it finished basically at a 2-point discount to the pricing. So anybody who got involved in that IPO is already $2 in the hole on a $12 stock. That's a pretty good haircut. The American Capital Strategy, AGNC. If you remember, this was a company that basically was raising capital to buy mortgage-backed securities. And it immediately traded to a discount, just like I said it would. These things never work right out of the gate. It's always better to get them in the aftermarket if you're even going to buy them at all. So that's one that you could start to look at now, but honestly, I think that it's a little early to be buying this name until they develop some sort of track record. The AIG priced a secondary. This was a quick offering, and we said that it would be difficult to get it done. Well, they got it done, but they had to get it done at a very low price. So they diluted the current shareholders. The stock traded down in order for them to get it done. And then the deal actually priced so far in the hole that it traded up from that pricing. So anybody involved in that deal did okay, but long term, I think AIG still has a lot of issues to work out before you can get involved there. And then finally, we said that the one name that had a chance of getting done was ASTI, Ascent Solar, because the solars have been so hot lately. Oh, pardon the pun. Anyway, the solars have done very well, and ASTI actually had a decent gain, almost $1 off of $14 pricing. So that's one that you might want to keep on your radar. It probably has a shot at working from here. The thing that was surprising last week was that we saw so many secondaries priced. These are rapid offerings that basically investors, large investors in these companies, or the companies themselves are flocking to the market to raise capital or to get out of their shares. There's kind of a sense out there that there's a window open right now where there's liquidity and you can get out of a stock or you can raise capital. But the sense is that that window is not going to be open for very long, and so everybody's trying to take advantage of it right away. And so from our side, from the investor side, you know, it's interesting to watch this, but once that liquidity dries up, many of the names that have done well or many of the names that have raised additional capital are going to be great names to put on the short block and to trade on the way back down. It's not time to do that yet, but it's something to keep an eye on. All right, so a couple of the secondaries that priced this week that you should take note of are JASO, which is JA Solar. They raised $230 million basically for working capital. So the stock has been trading well, and management just said, hey, we need to go ahead and take advantage of this high stock price. We'll sell a bunch of shares, we'll get the capital, and then we'll be able to use that in our business. And they should still continue to do well, but it's a little late in the game in the solars. The second one was NLY, Annaly Capital. This is similar to the AGNC deal that we talked about, only this name has been trading for a long time, and they've got an established management. And they basically have already been buying mortgage-backed securities and trading them profitably. So this is a name that I think that you could look at as far as an investment and probably do all right with. They priced it. There's no more shares overhanging, and so people are basically expecting it to move forward from this point. All right, so on the docket for this week, we have an abbreviated calendar due to the Memorial Day weekend coming up. But we do have one IPO. This is MF Residential Investments. It is, yes, another mortgage-backed security company. So these guys are doing the exact same thing that AGNC did last week. If you want to see what MF Residential is going to do, look at AGNC from last week. They're going to trade at a discount to the offering. And if you're interested in the company, you should buy them after the IPO, not on the deal. All right, so as far as secondaries are concerned, we've got three that are, you know, modestly interesting. There's Hughes Communication, H-U-G-H. This is a satellite and an internet company. There's a medical company that the ticker symbol is B-A-B-Y. These guys detect infant disorders, and they get a prize for having the most creative stock ticker symbol. And they're probably going to do okay. There's not going to be a huge premium on the name, but you can probably make a little bit of money on the deal. And then Polypore International, PPO. This is a specialty chemical company. The chemical companies have been doing very well, and so this is the name that you should keep an eye on. And then finally, the last name on the calendar is the one that I'm the most interested in.
Oh, okay.
This is TBS International. Mm-hmm. Ticker symbol.
Watch those eye teeth.
TBSI. These guys basically are another shipping company, and they are raising capital to buy new vessels and to pay off their debt. And if you look at any of the comparables, Diana Shipping, Dry Ships, Euroseas, and there's a handful of other ones out there, these guys have been doing very well. What's happened is the index, the dry ship index, the amount of money that it costs to ship goods across the ocean has been very, very high. And so all these companies are able to charge great prices for their day rates, and the stocks have been doing incredibly well. Stearman, my fund, has been very positive on the shippers, and we've made a lot of money this spring on Diana Shipping, Dry Ships, and Euroseas. This run is getting a little extended, so I would be careful with TBSI. I think it's going to do well on the deal, but looking long-term, these names are already pretty extended, so there's more risk in place. To go back to last week, we were looking at the CNBC Challenge, and I picked GXDX, and you know what? They didn't do anything, which is a good sign for the stock. You know, they traded up significantly at the end of last week on some great news, and now they're consolidating that gain. I want to stay with the stock. I think that this week we could see them add to those gains, and it could have a great move. For more information on these names and many other names that are coming public, take a look at zachstocks.com. That's Z-A-C-H stocks.com. And Corey, Andrew, thank you guys for letting me participate in the conversation, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Hey, thanks so much for joining. Oh, awesome. That was great. Great Zach Zone today. I encourage everybody to go check out the Zach Zone at zachstocks.com. Good friend of mine and a very, very smart portfolio manager. Also, I think maybe it's good timing that I'll tell you about what I did last week in the CNBC Market Challenge, because it was kind of a cool week, although in the beginning they had some problems with their currency component. But the first day, you won't believe this. After the first day, I was number 280 out of 500,000. I had a huge gain on a few different things. What we're doing is picking the absolute craziest stocks from an earnings standpoint on a daily basis. Right now, I think I'm number 10,000 overall. We made about $85,000 the first week in profits, about 8% for the week. And this week we have a few more things coming up. And if anybody out there has been playing the game of CNBC Challenge, love to hear from you. Send it on to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Tell me what you're doing. Tell me your strategy. Tell me where you're placing. Tell me, I don't know, whatever you want to know. If you like the contest, if you think it's awful, if you love it, whatever you want to do, let me know what's going on there. All right, we're going to wrap it up because we are getting to the end of the time limit for The Disciplined Investor. Great show today. Make sure that, as I mentioned before, that you go check out that special indication of interest. Again, I put that at the bottom of The Disciplined Investor. It's kind of hard to find, but it's all the way at the bottom. You'll see a little click area that says indication of interest, and you can click that. And if you do, in fact, want to participate in the newest thing that we're doing, because, again, we get so many emails from people asking me to open a fund and ask them to invest at a reduced level than our usual money management level. I did so for you. At least we're at the finishing stage of this. I want to make sure we have enough interest here. Again, it's just a preliminary survey. That's all it is. So go check it out at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And otherwise, we'll see you next week. If you have any questions, feel free to ask me or ask away. And otherwise, have a great week. A lot coming up. A lot of good economics probably going to be seeing this week. Earnings season is starting to weigh down a little bit and kind of slow up a little bit. But nonetheless, I think that it's still going to be an exciting week, and we're going to see a few things of interest. I promise you that. All right, this is Andrew Horowitz signing off The Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you next week.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.